Hello, everybody, and welcome to Random Trek Review, the podcast where we analyze, discuss, and review randomly selected Star Trek episodes. My name is Matt, and I'll be your host for this edition of RTR, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Andrew. Or are you the Silver Blood copy of Andrew?
I don't know which one I am, but I noticed that my chair is actually sinking a little bit, just like a centimeter every couple of seconds, so... Yeah, I better get out of here soon, otherwise I might not have enough energy to pull myself out of it.
Yes, well, we'll have to make this a quick episode then.
But yeah, no, I'm doing all right. It's fun to be back with Voyager. I always kind of like Voyager. This is another parlay into it, so...
Yeah, we've got a lot of Voyager episodes so far, but nothing wrong with that.
No, I mean, yeah, I think that it's as good as any of the other series, so, yeah, have we had a couple back-to-back? No, it's been a little bit, but it's fun to be back in the Delta Quadrant.
Indeed. So, why don't we start by going back to the end of the last podcast and talk about how I did with my recall of the episode that we'll be looking at.
So, you know what? I feel like this is actually one of the rare times where... you pretty much got every piece of it. There wasn't a massive B plot in this particular episode, so I feel like it was a good opportunity to really get all of the pieces. I just kind of quickly jotted down some of the things that you had mentioned. So you had that it was a demon planet and that it was demon class. That was correct. You had that they were running low on energy or materials. That was correct. You said that they landed the ship. That was correct. You said that there was a strange compound or like some sort of evil liquid or something like that, which was true. It was silver blood or mercury or something like that. You said that Kim and Paris went off on their own and that they like either died or like somehow fell ill and then were later duplicated. That was true. You said that the duplicated people could breathe the atmosphere. That was true. And you got the fact that they convince the Voyager crew to duplicate everybody, and then they fly away, the original crew flies away, and the duplicated crew stays behind to create their own civilization. That, my friend, is a 5 out of 5. And this week we are looking at 5 out of 5 demon planets. So that's a 5 out of 5 demon planets. Well done.
Well, that's this episode obviously made a pretty big impression on me because I remembered quite a bit of it.
And you know what? Last time we had Voyager episode, I believe that you had a 5 out of 5 that time as well.
Jeez, I have an affinity for Voyager, it seems.
That is very, very true. Yeah, last time was Ashes to Ashes, and you got 5 out of 5 on that one. 5 out of 5 on this one. I guess Voyager is a bit of your jam.
So far, anyways.
Yeah, so far so good. Well done.
We'll see how it goes in the future. Yeah, so we're going to be looking at Star Trek Voyager this week. The episode is called Demon. It's from the fourth season, episode 24, so pretty close to the end of season four. It originally aired on May 6th, 1998. It has only one single guest star, Alexander Enberg as Ensign Vorik. It was written by Kenneth Biller, and it was based on a story by Andre Bormanis, and it was directed by Anson Williams. So in case you didn't get a chance to watch it, we'll give you a quick synopsis so you at least have some idea of what we're talking about here. The lights are out. Voyager is raining dangerously low on deuterium, forcing the crew to put the ship in gray mode to conserve as much power as possible. Tuvok corrals the crew into tightly packed quarters, much to the chagrin of Neelix, who is unable to take his bedding with him because it is deemed non-essential. Seven refuses to leave Astrometrics despite Chakotay's insistence, but just in the nick of time, she finds a planet that appears to be rich in deuterium, but there is a catch. It is a demon-class planet, which makes it completely inhospitable to human life. Voyager tries beaming up some of the deuterium, and the transporter is rendered inoperable. Kim and Paris volunteer to brave the demon planet and head down in a shuttle. They barely make it to the surface of the planet and begin to look for the source of the deuterium. They find a pool of metallic liquid, which seems to be the source of the deuterium. And while Paris wanders off to look for more, Kim falls into the pool and Paris is able to pull him out. But both of their space suits spring a leak and they fall unconscious to the ground. After Voyager is unable to locate the away team, Janeway decides to land the ship on the planet. The ascent results in some damage to the ship, and while repairs are underway, Chakotay leads another away team to find Paris and Kim. They find the shuttle, and shortly after, Chakotay slips on a ledge and is pulled up by Tom Paris without his spacesuit. They also find Kim, sans spacesuit, and bring them back to the ship. Paris and Kim are unable to breathe the air and have to stay in sickbay in a containment field filled with the demon planet's atmosphere. Janeway and Torres study the metallic liquid and discover that it can copy living things it comes into contact with, which leads Janeway to conclude that Kim and Paris are copies. Another away team goes to the surface and finds Kim and Paris in their spacesuits but unconscious, but they are still alive. Kim's copy refuses to return to the ship and runs off. A pool of the metallic liquid forms under Voyager, preventing them from leaving the planet. Kim's copy returns to the ship and explains that the metallic fluid, the silver blood, is alive but had never experienced sentience until it came into contact with Ensign Kim. Kim's copy explains that the fluid wishes to copy the entire crew and populate the planet. Janeway agrees to provide DNA samples of the entire crew in exchange for a supply of deuterium. The trade is completed, and Voyager takes off from the planet with the crew's copies looking on from the surface. Okay, let's start by each of us giving a quick impression of what we thought of the episode. Andrew, why don't you go ahead?
I think this one is okay. I watched it a couple of times just because I wanted to be good and ready for the podcast and all. And I feel like there's lots of good pieces, but I don't know if it all comes together as a whole. I think that there could have maybe been something a little bit more exciting, a little bit more payoff. I kind of felt like, you know, the demon planet, they sold it to be so hospitable and stuff, but it really doesn't ever actually kills anybody or anything like that. Like, I almost kind of wish that they had made it a little bit more foreboding or something. And the fact they land the ship there and stuff like that too makes me feel like it was never really felt like it got to the same level of danger as some other episodes of Voyager. So I think it's okay. I kind of remember watching this the first time, and I think that the thing that sits out for me is just the fact that, like, I am pretty sure they never do another demon planet in all of the different series, which is either, number one, like, it's a waste of the demon planet idea, and that's maybe a good idea to maybe do another episode where they go to a demon planet, or people just kind of forgot about this one, and they kind of forgot that that was, like, a thing. Because I feel like it's a great idea. It's awesome to have an idea, have a planet that's not hospitable, because usually it's an M-class planet where they just go down, it's just like Earth. But the idea of a planet that's really, really super dangerous is a great idea. I kind of wish they had reused it or had done it more. I feel like it couldn't make for a good story trajectory. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, it's not a bad episode. There are some interesting concepts. I kind of like this whole, like, aliens, this, like, alien fluid thing that can, like, change its physiology and copy other life forms. I thought that was pretty cool. And I like the demon planet. Like, it wasn't just inhospitable. It was like, you, like, set foot in this without a spacesuit, like, you're just going to, like, liquefy mm-hmm. within minutes. Like, it was pretty intense just how inhospitable this demon planet was. The way they described it, it sort of lived up to its name. As far as the first time I saw it, I don't know if it was it was possibly during the original run of the series, but I'm not 100% sure. I mean, DS9 was in its heyday at this point, so I may have, like, missed it the first time around, or I probably would have seen it pretty soon afterwards. I mean, I would say it was pretty memorable. I mean, it obviously made an impression on me because I was able to recall a lot of things from it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty decent, a decent episode. Now, there's a very interesting story about how this was developed. There was an original idea that was sort of floated around for I read that it was floated around for almost a year before they finally got around to fully developing it. The original idea had a crew of Voyager copies reach Earth and then engage in this like invasion or takeover of Earth. So like the idea for the opening scene would be that like Voyager returns and there's all this fanfare, there's fireworks and all this crazy stuff, and then Janeway would reunite with her her love interest, and then like the very last thing before going to commercial, she just breaks his neck. So I mean, that's very different than what we ended up with.
I kind of wonder why they didn't do that. Like, that just, that little teaser makes it sound like a better episode than the one we got. And I wonder why they chose not to do it. I kind of feel like it maybe was probably like a cost thing. Like, it was going to be cost a lot to... But then not really. It's on Earth. It makes it seem like it would be easy.
Yeah, I mean, from what I read, it was an idea that someone had, but they couldn't really fully develop it to a full episode or something like that. And they'd come back to it for a bit, and they'd be like, we can't make it into an episode. They would leave it. They'd come back to it. They'd leave it. They'd come back to it. And eventually, I think what sort of got them going to get this into an episode was that someone came up with the idea for a demon planet. Of like, oh, let's have them visit this planet that's just like harsh and inhospitable, and it's like, okay, but what else are we going to do? And then they sort of, someone I guess came back to that other idea and said, well, why don't we sort of combine them and make some, and that's how we got to Demon, the episode.
I kind of feel like this sounds like it's better as two separate ideas in two separate episodes.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're just going to visit a really inhospitable planet, though, there has to be some reason for it. Because I feel like they would probably avoid visiting a planet like that unless they had no choice.
Well, that's kind of what happens, right? Like, it happens in the sense that it's just so dangerous, but they have no... They're going to either run out of gas or they're going to go to this planet to try to get it. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like if they didn't do the copy thing, would it really have changed this episode at all?
Well, I'm sure they could have found some other... obstacle or problem for them to solve.
Yeah, so. And you know what? Maybe this is kind of like this is me saying it in 2018 versus in 1998, but maybe this episode would be better. You go to a hospital planet and somebody just dies. And so the episode is about the casualties of long distance deep space exploration. And sometimes you're going to have to go and put yourself in a situation where you could lose a crew member or multiple members, but you have to do it for the greater good. I feel like that's more of a story than, like, they don't even really get into the idea of copying the people as being anything more than just like, oh, we'll go do a vote. And then the next thing you see them, they're all copied. Like, did everybody do it? Did anybody have reservations about it? Like, there is something to that about, you know, whether people would want to be copied or not, but they don't even discuss it. It's just like, oh yeah, that's fine. And off they go.
Yeah, that's something I was going to have us talk about a little bit later on.
Right.
Now, this is the first time that we see a planet that's, like, outright hostile towards humans. I mean, like we said, the atmosphere is just so toxic. Like, didn't they say that you would liquefy or, like, just...
Yeah, and that's my biggest problem with the episode is that we don't really get to see any of the really nasty parts of the planet. We only really are told that it's so bad. Right, yeah. I kind of feel like this was an opportunity for a red shirt to get killed.
Yeah. All right, let's jump right into this here. So the ship is running dangerously low on deuterium, as we see at the very beginning, and they go into gray mode to conserve power. Now, this is, I believe, the first time we have seen... gray mode in an episode. Do you think it's surprising we don't see it more often?
Well, there was those episodes at the beginning of Voyager where they were all kind of on food rations and the holosuite privileges were kept to a minimum, like basically just for like exercise purposes and for like, you know, very limited amounts just to kind of psychologically be able to get through the process. It almost makes me wonder as, like, why wouldn't you just be in gray mode all the time back then if it was a thing?
Yeah, that would be sort of one thing that I would wonder about.
Right. So I think that, I mean, it's one of those things where I think that it just kind of is it makes sense that there would be kind of like a low power option. I feel like in Discovery, they kind of do that where, like, if you're in the halls, only the lights come on when you're walking through it, like just to save energy and stuff like that. So that's something obviously they've thought about in the past, or in the future, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. Gray mode. I don't like when they kind of just do a one-off, which is kind of the same problem that I'm going to eventually have here with the Demon Planet. Is like, if you only see it once, I don't love it.
They do actually do it one other time.
The gray mode or the Demon Planet?
The gray mode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Running out of energy kind of idea again.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, maybe this is it, right? It's Voyager, so there has to be, like, they're way more likely to run out of resources. There's no star bases, there's no, but no help, no nothing, right? So.
Yeah, well, that was sort of the thing that I was going to say is, like, you know, the other series take place well within the range of the Federation. So, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me that we don't have never seen it before.
True, very true. So. Now, they're looking for deuterium. Do you know what deuterium is?
Ooh, I know it's real.
Yep.
I'm not a physicist or a chemist, so I don't know. But so, I know that it's real.
Yes. Well, that's good. So deuterium is basically just hydrogen that has one proton, one neutron, so it's slightly heavier. It's used in fission reactions, which makes sense, I suppose, because the warp drive runs on fission. Like, you need fission to start it, maybe, or it's a matter-antimatter reaction, but I'm assuming that there's, like, a nuclear fission aspect of it.
Yeah, or it could be a way to power, like, the electrical systems on the ship.
Maybe, yeah.
I own the Star Trek tech manual, but I don't
know. You're not like Scotty. You don't like just pouring a nice glass of scotch and just sitting down reading the technical manuals.
That's not typically how I spend my Friday nights.
You know? But why not make this trilithium?
Who knows?
Anyway, so deuterium is actually quite rare on Earth. It does exist, and you can find it, but it's like really in small amounts. Mm. Probably because we're not living on a demon planet.
That's right.
Otherwise, we'd have tons of it.
There'd be pools of it everywhere. So Paris and Kim take a shuttle down to the planet to look at for the deuterium that they detect from orbit. Now, were you surprised that we end up with those two going to the planet?
So there's kind of this really... a really kind of a forced dialogue that happens before they decide to go. And Harry's talking about how he has all this experience now, and, you know, he's not a rookie, and he's not an... Well, he still is an ensign. He never gets out of it. But he says that he doesn't feel like, you know, his ideas are no longer not valid and all that kind of stuff. And so he's, like, going to take the initiative. And then there's all these kind of really bad jokes that they throw back and forth, and Paris eventually ends up kind of getting goaded into going, or just kind of being voluntold to go. And I think that, like, maybe this was way funnier back in the late 90s, but it was not really landing with me. Like, there was a, and this is maybe jumping a little bit too far ahead, but, like, I almost kind of feel like Paris was doing, like, the Roger Moore thing, you know? We're running out of juice, we're going to be drifting, and we're just going to die in space. And he's, like, making all the, like, these quips every 2 seconds. And there's, like, a classic, classic Roger Moore moment where they're in the spacesuits and they've got, like, a minute left. And he goes, "We've only got a minute worth of air, like, conserve your energy, like, speak only when necessary." And then he makes, like, about 3 or 4... zingers before he eventually runs out of juice. And that, like, exact same thing happens in For Your Eyes Only, where Roger Moore says, only speak when necessary. And then he's just zinger, 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 zinger. And I get flashback to that when Paris said it in this episode. So
you gotta get your zingers in.
I guess so. But, like, wouldn't you think that you'd be a little bit more, like, especially when they're, like, they're dying and he's still making jokes? Like, I didn't get that at all, personally, but what did you think of that part?
Well, I as far as am I surprised that it was them, not really, given how the episode had kind of gone. Like, Paris is obviously going to be a choice because he's the best pilot.
That is true.
But I don't know. I guess I thought the banter between them was actually really good.
Oh, okay. Do tell.
You know, they sort of have this friendship that evolves over the course of the show. And, I mean, at this point, we're a little more than halfway through.
And, yeah, about halfway.
Yeah, and it's you know, and it was one thing that sort of grew over the course of the show. And I thought it was actually pretty good.
I'm not saying that that their banter isn't a good thing. I just didn't think that the lines and the jokes were really that.
You didn't like the bicycle in the mess hall thing?
Yeah, but they bring it back like two or three times. You know what? I think that the running theme for me throughout this episode is going to be, and I'm just going to probably keep saying it again and again, so maybe I'll just like just get it off my chest right now, is that the Demon Planet was never taken to be very super serious. Well, they say about it in the beginning, oh, you'll melt, your face will boil off, and you'll be dead within seconds and stuff like that. And then even when they're literally dying, they're out of air, they're done, they're still making jokes, and they never really took it super seriously. And then they land the ship, even though it goes against all logic, and like it puts the whole crew in danger. Stuff. It was never really made to seem like a serious threat.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Anyways, let's move on to the whole Neelix versus the Doctor bit.
That was kind of like a little bit of a B plot, right?
Yeah, so Tuvok is like hurting the crew, like they're all like, you know, tripling or whatever up in the quarters so they can shut down a bunch of the decks and conserve power. And so Neelix, he's like herding Neelix to this new place where he has to go to sleep, and Neelix is all like, oh, I want to take my blanket with me, oh, I want to take my bedtime storybook with me and all this stuff. And Tuvok's like, nope, those are non-essential items, Mr. Neelix, you will have to leave them here. And he's all like, oh, but now I'm not going to be able to sleep. I'm going to get a rash from the Starfleet sheets and all that stuff. And Tuvok's like, well, I suggest you go to sickbay and get a whatever. And Neelix is like, oh, I have an idea. And him and like this band of squatters, like, you know, takes over sickbay. Or, well, at first they just sort of waltz in, and the doctor's like, what are you doing? You can't sleep here. And, I guess that is as close to a B plot as we get.
It was pretty funny. Like, it wasn't really that many times that they went back, but it was kind of just one of... I think it was, again, like, I almost feel like another episode, this could have been, like, a whole thing where everybody's having to bunk up and it's causing frustrations and stuff. They threaten to turn the doctor off because he's not he's not being helpful enough and stuff. I don't know if I'd want to even sleep on those sick bed beds. They look so uncomfortable, like... You get that little silver sheet that looks like it's not even warm.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it was pretty much a comic relief thing. But yeah. I didn't really see, like, there was much point aside from that. I mean, it didn't really...
I think that it would have been perfect. Again, if the Demon Planet was way scarier, the juxtaposition between, like, the real dangers on the outside and some of the comic relief stuff that was happening on the inside would have been a better... fit, right? But and then when you have Paris joking and goofing around, this didn't seem as funny because it was just kind of like a side piece, you know?
I love this. The one part that I really did like, though, was when the doctor's like singing while they're trying to sleep, right. And Neelix is like, oh, I have an idea, why don't we have a sing-along? Yeah. And he like rings off all these really annoying sounding like songs that he knows, and the doctor's finally just like, all right, fine, you win.
Right, yeah.
I thought that was...
And this is before the doctor can leave sickbay, right? This is before the hollow emitter.
I feel like he would have had the hollow... I think that was, like, middle of season three when he...
That's what I kind of was thinking, but then I was like, why doesn't he just leave? Because he says that this is his home, right?
I don't know. Now, as you mentioned, Janeway, she decides to land the ship because they can't find the away team. They're like, oh, we can't find their life signs. They must be gone. We can't send another shuttle down, or we might lose the other shuttle. So she decides to land the ship. Is this something that you think Voyager maybe went to too often or just right?
Well, you know what, Matt? That's interesting that you brought that up, because that's my trivia question for today. How many times did they land the ship, and can you name the episodes in which they did it?
Oh, boy.
Or would you rather me tell you when, how many times, and then you can try to guess that?
I don't know if I have a shot at this one, just because it's done so randomly. I mean, it's not like TNG with the saucer separating, where it's like special. All in the first season, except for one time.
And
so,
then the Generations, they do it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think I would sit here for 15 minutes and probably still not be able to get them all.
All right, well, if I told you that it happens five times and Demon is one of them, could you take a ballpark guess at the other four?
I know the ship is landed in Basics, but I don't know if that counts because it was the Kazon who landed it.
No, that one is one of them, so that means there's three left.
Oh, That's a good question.
There's an episode that's actually we talked about last week.
Last week?
Yep.
Hmm.
I forget why we were talking about it, but it's from the first season, maybe the beginning of second season.
Oh, it was, they did land in the 37th.
The 37th?
That's the first time.
That's the first time they landed, yeah. I don't remember why we were talking about that now, but... and then there's two other ones, which I don't really remember at all. Do you want to take a guess or nah?
I think we've... I don't want to...
You're not going to get them? Yeah. So they landed in Dragon's Teeth to avoid attack, and they landed in Nightingale to do some maintenance on the warp drive. And that was it, the five times. I feel like in my memory they did it all the time, but five times in seven seasons, that's...
That's actually surprising.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been more than that. Dragon's Teeth I do remember, actually.
Yeah. I think that...
Nightingale, I do remember that episode, too. But yes...
I guess the other one would be Voyage Home. They do land the Bird of Prey. Right?
They land it twice.
Yeah. So. I don't know, though. I think it's kind of cool because... they make a very big point to make sure that everybody knows, like, Voyager is the newest ship in the line. It has, like, it's a bit smaller, so it makes more sense that it can land.
Yep.
Whereas the capital ships don't land, like, they are either in orbit or they're crashed. And so I kind of like that Voyager has some of these little intricacies that makes it different. The bio cells and the landing and all that kind of stuff. It makes it just that little bit unique that... I actually don't mind it. This time I think is probably maybe the worst one or the dumbest reason to do it, just because, again, the risk of it, right? It doesn't make a whole ton of sense.
All right. Now the away team goes to look for Paris and Kim. So that's Chakotay and Seven of Nine after they land the ship, and they find the metallic fluid. Now, when they found it, were you expecting anything like to happen with the pool? Because earlier Kim said that he felt that he was like drawn to it and like pulled inside of it earlier. So do you think something would happen to Chakotay
nope.
7? No.
Nope. Other than you had told me that there was a duplication thing. So that was like, I was like, oh, okay, obviously this fluid is going to do it. I kind of had like a bit of a Skin of Evil feel. Remember the black monster that kills Tasha Yar?
Yeah.
But it was like a black pool. And I think Riker falls into it.
Yes.
I feel like when Harry falls in, that was very similar to that scene almost.
The big difference I would say to that is we didn't actually see him fall in. So
right.
It's like implied that maybe something happened, but you don't really know.
That's true. And like, just so that we're clear, if you and I ever go to like a demon planet and we're searching around, like we're not splitting up. That seemed like the dumbest possible thing to do, but, we're definitely not splitting up. That's like horror movies 101, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I wouldn't have been surprised if something had happened. Because there was, I mean, it definitely seemed to be kind of the key to some of the strange things that were happening. I don't know. I guess it wasn't really surprising that nothing happened.
But that the other thing about it, too, is that they kind of established that Paris is, like, he was kind of acting so jokey that when he shows up without the spacesuit on, I didn't know whether it was, like, a duplicate Paris who's a completely different, like, his personality seemed different, but the same for this particular episode. And it was just that whole kind of piece was very confusing to me, basically, especially since I didn't know the final payoff, really. So I felt it would be a bit confusing. On your rewatch of it, did you feel the same way, or did this make perfect sense?
Yeah, I mean, that was the next thing I was going to go to, was like the shocking reveal of like Paris, like Chakotay sort of like trips on the ledge or whatever, and he's like hanging on for dear life, and then Paris shows up, he's got no spacesuit on.
Right.
And, I remember the first time I watched it, I seem to remember that I thought it was pretty shocking, especially considering how they built up this, like, inhospitable planet that, like, humans cannot survive on in any circumstance, and all of a sudden he shows up, he's got no suit on.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, what's going on here, you know?
I did think that Chakotay and Seven are very skeptical, right?
They're
like, okay, that's great. But we're going to take you back to the ship and get this sorted out. That part was good.
Yeah, because I remember he's like, come on, take your helmet off. You'll feel great in 5 seconds. And it's like, what are you talking about? This is like demon planet.
Yeah, it seemed like it was evil, right? Like it seemed like it was not And that was kind of what I was thinking was going to happen, was that they were going to, the gray replica people were going to be evil and trying to get them to, like, commit suicide in order for them to copy them or something. But that doesn't really happen either. Hey, Andrew here, and I just wanted to say thanks for listening to Random Trek Review. If you want to get some more Star Trek goodness, then make sure to check out the RTR blog at randomtrekreview.blogspot.com. You can also find us on social media, iTunes by searching for Random Trek Review, Twitter for by searching at Rando Trek Review, and Instagram at Random Trek Review. Or if you just want to use the old style way of emailing questions, comments, or just gripes in general, then feel free to drop us a line at randomtrekreview@gmail.com.
Alright, so the away team then finds Ensign Kim, who is also without his spacesuit, and says he feels great. Now, we've seen both Paris and Kim without their spacesuits on. At this point, what are you thinking? Like, how are these guys running around without spacesuits on?
So, I think that... I thought they were evil versions of them, obviously. We kind of didn't talk about when Kim and Paris died, like, quote-unquote. And we're kind of getting up to that part where they find the other two of them. And I feel like that part was really... That was probably the most interesting piece, when they get holes in their suits, I guess it was, and then they, like, collapse. I didn't really like the way that it was kind of handled, but I thought that it was a great idea. And for some reason, I thought, at this point anyway, that the gray stuff had basically resurrected the two bodies. Because that's what I was thinking at the time.
Okay.
Now later we find that the bodies are still, like, they're still there. But at this point in time, I thought that the gray stuff had resurrected them with some sort of evil intentions.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really know what to think. I mean, it seemed very unlikely that they would have, like, miraculously and spontaneously adjusted to this, like, super harsh demon class planet atmosphere. So. I figured something was up, but I wasn't really sure exactly what it was.
So, because almost immediately they go back to the sick bay, and when they go back to the sick bay, they can't breathe the actual air.
That's right. Yeah, that's sort of the next thing, that the major thing that kind of happens. Now, is that something that you saw coming, or were you surprised by that when they were,
well,
like, you know, they beam up and they're like, oh, I can't breathe, I can't breathe.
So I kind of had a lot of feelings here, but I feel that I kind of thought that the gray stuff had resurrected them, but then I was thinking that maybe the demon planet atmosphere was similar to, you know, when you go, like, mountain climbing and it's low atmosphere, and if you were to, like, slowly integrate yourself as you went up the mountain, then when you get to the top, you can probably breathe relatively well because your body adapted to it. Whereas, like, if you take a gondola or something, when you get to the top of the mountain, you're like, like, this is really hard to do. So I was kind of thinking that, like, maybe because they were on the demon planet for so long, they had adapted slightly, maybe with the help of the gray stuff. And then when they went back, it was kind of the reverse effect, where they would have the same problem with a regular atmosphere. But I was kind of between those two things. Right. It turns out it's neither, but... I do kind of like that idea. I feel like they didn't do this often enough. I remember in an episode of Next Generation, I don't remember which one, they had some, like, dignitaries come, and they had special, like, breathing masks because they didn't breathe oxygen-rich air. They breathed something different.
Yep.
And that's probably more realistic. If space is filled with a bunch of different sentient beings, they probably don't breathe all, like, what, we had, like, 30% oxygen, 70% nitrogen. Yeah. Like, it's... probably that they have different things that they breathe. So I think that that's a really cool idea, and this is, like, another kind of instance of that, right? Like a fish out of water.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a little bit surprised that they couldn't breathe at all, and there wasn't really any indication that they'd been altered that drastically, although I guess they could breathe the demon planet air, so I guess, yeah, I don't know. I was a little bit surprised by that.
It is kind of a, like, Neelix getting kicked out of the sick bay is basically, like, the metaphorical version of, like, kicking out the B plot as well. Like, this plot's over, out, bye, and that's, like, the last you hear of it.
Yeah, yeah, Neelix, yeah, sort of, it was the end of that little plot point.
I wasn't really super sad to see it go, to be honest.
Yeah, Neelix, like, right as soon as doctor gets word that there's like a medical emergency, he's like clapping his hands, yeah. Wake up everybody, time to check out. And were you like surprised that Neelix was like, he like turned coat pretty quickly, because he was like, as soon as the doctor said medical emergency, he's like, all right everybody, we have to go, it's time to leave.
Yeah.
And, dude, I don't know, he fought pretty hard to stay there. Wouldn't you be like, oh come on doctor, are you sure we need to leave?
Yeah, I think that it was kind of convenient writing. It was almost, that whole side plot really felt like they had 7 minutes to fill, and they were like, well, we need something for Neelix to do, so that's what they decided on. But
they need something for Tuvok to do at the beginning. He was hardly in this episode at all.
Yeah, that's true. I think that
the bridge, and that was that, this thing with Neelix, and that was about it.
Yeah, that's true. And to be honest with you, even the whole Tuvok thing, like, who really cares if he brings his own blanket? Does that it really take up that much space or extra time or what have you? Like, it does not matter at all. And they just kind of threw it in there for the sake of it, so.
But it's illogical to not use Starfleet issue
sheets. Yeah, that's true. It's got to have, like, that Star Trek Voyager insignia on the side of it.
Now, so shortly after this, there's a scene where Torres and Janeway are in, like, the science lab, and they're studying a sample of the compound that, I guess, 7 of 9 collected and brought back. And while they're sort of working away, Torres, like, isn't paying attention, and it, like, oozes onto her, like, finger and then copies it. Was this where you kind of started figuring out, like, what was going on? Like, is this where it kind of started to come together?
Yes and no, because to me, I was like, okay, that's, so it copies you, right? But Paris didn't go, his whole body never went in the stuff, only his hand.
And it was supposedly in a, like, enclosed space suit.
So, that's the only thing. Also, like, there is some things in Star Trek that it's just like, you're not wearing gloves, like, you don't know what this stuff is, like, it's not in a containment field. It's really, if you don't know what something is, you definitely 100% should not let it get onto your skin. And like you said, it was like she was just not paying attention, which is, makes it even worse. But no, I started kind of piecing it together now, but I have to admit, at this point of it, I am starting to, it's starting to lose me. The demon planet's not really giving me enough fear, enough stakes, enough, like, it's, I'm really starting to slip at this point, I'm not going to lie.
Now, what do you think about this whole concept of, like, this, like, liquid life form that can copy things it can touches, like, you, I mean, are you like, you think that's an interesting or cool thing, or is that just sort of meh?
I think it's meh. I think it's okay. I think it's kind of a cool idea, right? Like, that you could copy something, but there's just so many better things that you could do with it, right? Especially since the copies seem to, you know, it's like, how did this stuff come about? You know, what's it doing there? How long has it been there for? And now that it has sentience because it touched somebody. I don't know. I think this, and then it starts sinking the ship as well, to prevent it from going, to copy the other people. I don't know. Do you think that this was intended to kind of be somewhat similar to the shapeshifters in Deep Space Nine, because they lived in a big pool and they could like create any shape and stuff? Like, were you kind of getting that kind of feel? It was even like kind of red, like their planet is. I mean, obviously the Deep Space Nine is like a million times better than this, but
I don't know. I thought it was kind of an interesting concept. I mean, I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but I do like that it was like a more, like a less developed life form. Like, it was sort of just like an instinctual thing. It wasn't really sentient. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea that maybe would have been good to maybe explore a little more. But I don't know, it's kind of wishy-washy. Like, has it existed all this time with this ability to, like, recreate anything it touches and just hasn't ever done it?
Well, it's never had the opportunity to, I guess. Because it lives on a demon planet?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Like, why would it evolve that ability?
I don't know. It's the same way with in the Skin of Evil, right? The monster was he like, he was damned to be there, and he was like the embodiment of all like evil thoughts and stuff like that. Like, how does that come about either, right?
Yeah.
I feel like at least with that one, it was, there was a bit more substance to it. Like, these guys are just kind of like, are they going to exist or not? And I feel like the biggest piece of it, which is, they copied these two guys without them really, like, their will, right? Like, it was kind of by accident.
Now, they send down another away team, and they find the original Kim and Paris in their spacesuits. They're alive, but they're unconscious.
I hate this. You know, I hate this. This is so stupid. They say that the planet is completely inhospitable, and if your skin touches the air, you will be killed, melted, your blood will boil. They rip their suits. They thing says that they have 30 seconds worth of breathable oxygen left. They try to stumble their way to the ship. They keel over face down, and you literally hear it go beep, like their hearts are stopped. And then they come like 2 days later or whatever it was. And they're all, you know what? They just have like a bit of a headache. Like, you know what? It wasn't that big of a deal. That just totally makes the demon planet seem so pointless. Like, if they'd gone without the suits at all, would it have mattered?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah.
Because they didn't die from this. That is so lazy and so... they could have easily written it that, like, the gray stuff saved them somehow. Like, by being copied, the gray new people saved them. You know what I mean? Like, out of thanks or something.
Yeah.
This was so lazy and so kind of, like, after the fact that, God, I hated this. Like, just don't even send Paris and Kim. Send two other people and you just find the dead bodies. And they're dead. Joe and, Sandra, like generic people from, you know.
That's all they would have done on the original series.
Well, yeah.
They would have been wearing red shirts.
But the thing is if it was Joe and Sandra, they wouldn't have landed the ship to save them, right? They'd just be like, oh, I guess those guys didn't make it. Like, I don't know. This part I really, really didn't like. And at this point, I'm kind of turning on the episode, to be honest with you. Like, I'm kind of going, like, they're not taking this in the direction I wanted them to go with it. And not only that, but, like, they're not even really sticking to their own rules that they established at the beginning.
It's really the only way they can sort of weasel their way out of it. Because, I mean, they can't go on in the series with Paris and Kim having to, like, breathe some crazy atmosphere. So, I mean, it wasn't the best way to go about it, I didn't think. But I don't really see where else they could have
helped. I think just don't write yourself into that hole, right? Like, what about this for an idea? They fall into the stuff. They go, oh no, like, the suits have holes in them. And they get back to the shuttle, and they just are, like, stuck in the shuttle or something. And they're, like, just waiting for them to come down until they can come back.
That would have made more sense, yeah.
Right?
But remember, Kim was, like, injured, and Paris had to, like, carry him, right?
Okay, well then maybe they could have, like, maybe they could have fallen into the gray stuff. The copies come out, and then they find them in the gray stuff, and they say, oh, that stuff also, like, suspends you in animation.
Yeah, that would work.
See? Like, there's two ideas right there.
Yeah, there are other ways they could have probably gone.
It's just like they didn't think of it. They just didn't think at all. They were just like, eh, well, I'm sure it'll work out.
Maybe no one will notice.
Well, we will notice. 20 years later, we noticed.
20 years, we got you.
Yeah.
The next sort of major part is there's this, like, pool of the fluid forms under the ship, and that prevents it from leaving. It, like, sort of traps the ship. It starts to sink into the pool, and meanwhile, the copy of Ensign Kim explains that the fluid was alive but never experienced sentience before. Now, because there's, like, a pool that just spontaneously forms, I mean, that suggests to me that there's some sort of a collective consciousness within it.
Yep.
Like, what do you think of that idea? Like, this, like, fluid having this weird sort of collective consciousness.
Like the changelings?
Well, I would say maybe, like, more primitive than the changelings, right? Because changelings, there's, like, individual beings within the
pool.
Yeah, whereas this one, it doesn't seem like that's the case.
Yeah, this is kind of maybe more of, like, a primordial ooze kind of thing, where it's not necessarily been... It's a neat idea, but I have to admit, by the time they started sinking the ship, I was looking at my watch just saying, like, when's this over? Like, I think that there was just too many cooks in the kitchen on this one or something. There's too many moving pieces, and they don't really flush out any of one of the pieces really well.
I mean, it was kind of an interesting other level to it. I mean, I found this whole idea of the silver blood creatures or whatever you want to call them. I thought it was kind of an interesting thing, but again, I mean, I sort of agree that they didn't really, you know, develop the idea fully or very well. It was just, I feel like they just sort of, like, made it up as they went along.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, the last thing I wanted to kind of go over is Janeway agrees to let them copy the crew. Now, how eager would you be to let some weird alien life form make a copy of you?
So this is another thing that I don't think is done very well, because if you think about our current world and our current climate, how many religions out there don't allow you to even, like, donate organs and blood, and, like, how many people in today's walk of life would not be down for something like this? And even though it's a couple hundred years in the future and they're so much more civilized and everything like that, you have different species, you have different cultures, different religions. There's no way that every single person would be like, yep, sure, no problem. Also, did they even do any kind of, like, research to see if there's any negative impact on being copied? Because you're allowing this stuff to, like, completely go over your whole body. So there could be, like, negative impacts of it. I thought that this was just a really kind of a lazy tack on to the end of the episode. I thought that if that was the whole episode, that's a different story. And there was some of the moral dilemmas of deciding, will I get copied or will I not get copied? That's interesting. Just deciding, oh yeah, sure, fine, no big deal. That seemed really, really lazy.
Well, and it seemed very out of character for Janeway. Like, yep. She made that decision very hastily and didn't really even think twice about it. Which, I mean, yeah, they're in dire straits. Like, your ship's, like, on the verge of running out of power. But I think that that's still something you might want to think about a little bit longer than, like, yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah, and also, like, they copy all these people. They leave them there. Do they need to eat? Do they have no infrastructure? They have no shelter in general. They have nothing. They just are kind of leaving this crew of like 400 people, and then they just kind of like wave out the window at them while they're all just sitting on this like awful planet to be left there for all eternity. Like, it's I don't know. I did not love the copying of people.
Yeah, it was kind of, I thought it was a little hasty, and I thought it was I don't know how I'd feel about letting some life form just copy my DNA.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea at all.
All right, we normally will go through the cast and characters. This is going to be a pretty quick little bit for this podcast, because it really isn't. There's only one guest star, and that is Alexander Edberg, who guest stars as Vork, the Vulcan engineer, who appears in a number of Voyager episodes. I didn't really bother to look it up, because I'm guessing there's at least a dozen, but... one thing that I found interesting, and now I remember Alexander Edberg plays another Vulcan engineer in one of my favorite Next Generation episodes, Lower Decks. The engineer is named Torek in that episode. Now, why do you think they would like go to the trouble of creating an entirely new character for Voyager that's essentially the same, played by the same actor?
Yeah.
Like, why not just make him the same character? And I've always wondered that.
Torek and Vorek. The only thing is does the timing work out? Because Lower Decks is what, season six?
Season seven.
Season seven. And Voyager doesn't start for another year after that, right? For 2 years.
I feel like it would have... I think Voyager started right after Next Generation ended.
So that would make sense.
I think the timing lines up.
Like, he could have been transferred over to Voyager for their deep space mission. That would make perfect sense. Yeah, why didn't they do that? I wonder if, especially since they literally made the name so similar,
yeah.
Torek and Vorek, like...
There's probably some practical reason, like, they couldn't use the name because they'd have
right.
to, like, give the writer of that other episode royalties or something.
Right, every time they showed up or something. Maybe that's what...
I mean, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, and you know what? You're probably right. That is probably what it is.
Now, I have a trivia question that I would categorize as rather difficult. So
okay.
If you don't know what it is off the bat, then maybe I'll just like give it to you. But Alexander Edberg has, now in addition to playing Torek, he's credited with one other role on Star Trek. Do
okay.
you have any idea what it could be?
Is it from Voyager?
It's actually from Next Generation.
Oh, it's from Next Generation. And it's not Torek from Lower Deck.
Like other, well, aside from Torek, he has one other credited.
One other credited. Okay, and is he a Vulcan?
No, he most definitely is not a Vulcan.
I have not a clue then.
Okay,
give it to me.
This is a very difficult one.
The deep cut.
Yeah, very deep cut. So in Time's Arrow Part 2, there's he plays a reporter.
Okay.
Who works for, I guess, the local newspaper, and at one point in the episode, he's asking Samuel Clemens about, he's very tough to spot because he's only on the screen for, like, maybe, I don't know. I think he appears on screen maybe twice, but it's very short.
Okay.
But if you listen, like, I would say he has a pretty distinctive sounding voice, and if you know to listen for it, I think you'd probably recognize the voice more than you would recognize him.
Interesting.
Now, he does appear in another Voyager episode, but it's, like, he's not credited as a guest star because he's in it for, like, 5 seconds.
I would never get it.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I just looked it up before we started recording.
Huh, interesting.
He was a Malon engineer that was basically sent to his death.
Oh, okay.
Well, that one is courtesy of Memory Alpha, not my brain.
Your deep knowledge.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the chemistry between Paris and Kim. Now, you said you didn't really like that whole part of this episode. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to sort of add to that?
I think that the Kim-Paris relationship throughout the series is one of the best ones. I think that there is... it's a great example of, like, male camaraderie, and there is that kind of... the difference between the two of them, where Paris, you know, he has all the luck with the ladies, whereas Kim doesn't. You know, Paris is more brash and, you know, he's kind of a rebel, whereas Kim's more like play it safe. Like, they're kind of a bit of the odd couple. I think that it's one of the best relationships on Voyager, and probably one of the best relationships in any of the Trek series, really. I just don't really love the jokiness of it in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching this episode, that was the one thing that really stood out to me, was how this is, I think it really shows how far they've come, because they, like, you're right in saying that they're very much different people, especially the beginning of the series. Mm-hmm. Paris was, like, literally bailed out of prison to go on this mission, and Kim is, like, this, you know, perfect protocol following, mm-hmm. young, upstanding ensign, and this is an episode where I think you really see how far they've come. And I mean, Voyager, there's a lot of really good, if you really think about it, there's a lot of really good relationships on Voyager. I mean, you think about, like, Seven and the Doctor, you think mm-hmm. about Paris and Torres, you think of Janeway and Seven and Nine. Like, there's so many, like, I feel like Voyager was really good at focusing, I mean, and it makes sense because it's such a small group and they're isolated, mm-hmm. so I mean, it really, they really sort of focus on how they interact with each other, I think, more than any of the other series. And you know, I would say that this whole Paris-Kim friendship is one of the, you know, better results of that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. And I feel like there were some, like, relationships that never really took off. Like, they kind of tried to make a thing with Kim and Torres at the beginning, remember, where they were, one was Maquis, one was Starfleet, and they were kind of had a prickly relationship and stuff like that, but it never really fruited into anything, which is probably pretty realistic to, like, working in a job, right, where there are certain people that you gravitate towards and you become close friends with, and there's other people that are, like, kind of just more like colleagues, and, you know, it's not like you have anything against them, but you're not going to go and hang out, play racquetball in the hall of suites after work, you know, like, I think that they did a very good job of that.
Some production notes. I wanted to talk about the set for the Demon Planet. Now, we did talk about this a little bit, but I know you've mentioned before that you love, like, the giant matte paintings.
Yep, I love me a matte painting.
Yep. I thought the Demon Planet set, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, you said you weren't crazy about the Demon Planet. I mean, did you think the set was okay?
So the set was good. I thought that it was great. Like, it kind of had, like, a Mars-y feel, or, like, Total Recall, remember? Like, it seemed inhospitable when they first got there. And they kind of had the smoke machines and that kind of stuff. I thought that the liquid thing is good. This is 7 years after the T-1000 in Terminator 2, right?
Yes.
It's basically the same thing, right? That silvery stuff, so that looked really good. And then they just go right back to, like, the classic Star Trek cave set, basically, right?
I wrote in my notes at least twice how much I liked the Demon set, or the Demon Planet set. Like, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I've never really thought about where I would rank, like, sets in Star Trek lore, because, I mean, unless one really jumps out at you, you don't really, it's just part of the story, right? But yep. I mean, if I were to sit down and like think about ones that really stood out to me, I feel like this one would probably be, you know, pretty close to the top of the list, because I feel like it was pretty foreboding and inhospitable, because like you said, they had like sort of that reddish color to it, yeah. And it had the smoke machines going, and I just thought it was really well done.
It makes it unique too that they're wearing the suits, because they don't really do the suits that often. I mean, we saw the suits in Bullying Web, but space is really, really harsh, right? Like, yep. The reality is going to space is very dangerous, and you know, traveling around in space at high speeds is even more dangerous. And so the fact that there's a planet, like there would be planets that are inhospitable, makes total sense to me. And that makes it even that much better with the suits and everything else. So I thought it looked really good, yeah.
And that sort of takes us into like some of the, there was quite a few like visual and special effects in this episode. There was Voyager landing on the planet, which I don't think was stock footage. I'm pretty sure that was like new. Mm-hmm. Then there was the Voyager being sort of like, sinking into the pool of the metallic fluid, and then there's the final scene where they launch and like all the crews like on the planet standing like I don't know, probably waving goodbye. I couldn't really tell, but what did you think of the visual effects in the episode?
I thought that they were pretty good. I remember reading that the thumb was like a CGI thing, like an early rendition of that, which is kind of cool. I thought the paintings all looked really great and kind of blended the two things together well. It was kind of during a time where that was the case. I think that the ship landing looked pretty good, although they kind of cheesed it with when they landed the shuttle, because they only did it from inside. Tom and Kim are kind of talking about, we're going to come landing in soon, and it just kind of goes, we landed. And then he makes kind of a quip about it, which is kind of interesting. I thought, yeah, visually it looked really good. I think that last shot, with all the crew members and stuff like that, I think I read somewhere that they had kind of like pieced that together from like stills and stuff like that from things. And like, apparently if you look closely, like there's Deep Space Nine characters and stuff that are like, shouldn't be there, but they are. Yeah. Interesting. So that's kind of a funny little piece of trivia if you paused it and zoomed in. Yeah, you know what? Overall, I'd say that this is pretty good. I don't think that this was one that was up for an Emmy or anything like that, but I thought that it was still pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the visual effects were pretty good. Like, the final scene for me was the one that I think will always, like, stick in my head, because I think it really leaves you wondering, like, what's going to happen to these crew, because mm-hmm. you actually see them
yep.
there as the ship's taking off, and it's like what's going to happen? What are they going to do?
Yeah, and I guess, like, that scene where Kim gets pulled out of the gray liquid, like, I guess those suits were just insanely expensive, and, like, they had to kind of do some very, like, camera trickery to make sure the suit actually didn't get ruined while they were, like, pulling him in and out of it, and it kind of took a lot of different angles and stuff, and, like, the actual amount of liquid was actually really small.
I don't think they used any. I think they... What I read was that they... Had they, like, built this, like, table, and I guess they cut a hole out of it, and then put, somehow, through camera wizardry, they just, using just this opening in the table, they were able to, in post-production, add the fluid afterwards.
Okay,
I read about it, and it was really complicated, and something that only the best... you know, camera people in Hollywood would be able to...
Well, and that's just it, right? Because I feel like nowadays it would just be a computer, right? They wouldn't even bother trying to make it into a real-life shot. So props to them. I like that.
And an interesting little piece of trivia is that the metallic fluid was actually silver model paint.
Huh. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You could paint the USS Enterprise with the silver model paint when you're done.
Exactly. Yep. That's how they gave Voyager Voyager model a fresh paint of coat. Okay. Now we don't always get to talk about an episode legacy, because a lot of them are sort of you know, single episodes. But this one actually did have there was a direct sequel to this episode that was at the end of the fifth season, so it would have been a year later. It was called Course Oblivion, and interestingly, it was. Both episodes were directed by Anson Williams.
Yeah, so I only very, very vaguely remember this one. I hope that this is actually... It would be kind of funny if this is the one that I pull out for this week's episode. That would be like longest shot ever if that were to happen. But
I was thinking about that. Like, we're going to talk about what it's about and what happens, and then I'll pull it out and you'll
have it. And I'll have it, yeah. I feel like it has something to do with, like, somehow they also copied Voyager, and they have their own ship, and they meet up with them later. But they're, like, starting to decompose. Like, they couldn't keep their form because of some sort of science-related thing. I think that... Is it, like... There's some sort of, like, trickery, too. Like, I think that B'Elanna and Paris get married, but then it's the duplicates or something. Or it's... It gets... The wedding reception gets ruined by the duplicate. I don't remember exactly. But, yeah, that's basically the gist of it, right? Is they thought that they would be able to have, like, the sentience... But it turns out that they won't survive it. They're gonna fall apart, basically.
Yeah, that's sort of a pretty very basic recap of the episode. I mean, it's pretty much what happens. Now there was a little bit of controversy with the sequel. There was basically the way that they sort of framed it, it really undermined all the episodes that aired between them, because there was like a perception amongst some people in the production staff that like. Anything that happened between Demon and Course Oblivion could have been, like, all those episodes in between could have been, like, was it the copy crew or was it the real crew? And there's, like, this perception that, like, it wasn't really made clear.
Right.
Especially with the ending of Course Oblivion. Because basically at the end of Course Oblivion, the real Voyager arrives answering this distress call just in time to find, like, everything all disintegrated. So it's like, so there's like some controversy surrounding that episode.
Right.
Because it kind of wasn't clear which crew was which.
It's kind of like Year of Hell, where all this bad stuff happens and then you do like a full reset button and it's like, well, what was the point of that then really, other than it was a good episode?
Now we'll get into some memorable scenes or quotes. Is there anything in particular that you liked?
I like to usually pick up one episode, like a quote or something that I like per episode. I don't know if I have one this time. I think that the doctor says, like, this is a sick bay, not a dormitory. That's kind of a funny line. What about you?
I really like the scene in the turbo lift. I think I mentioned that earlier on. I thought it was a good sort of introspective on Kim's part, and just like showed his how much he's changed from when he was this, you know, brash, young, upstanding ensign to, you know, a little bit more of a seasoned veteran. That was one that I that stuck out for me. Why don't you give your final thoughts, and we'll each give it a rating out of 5 pools of silver blood.
So you know what? I feel like you can probably hear in my voice that I'm just not really feeling the Demon Planet. I think that it was a bit of a waste. They had such a great idea here. They had 3 really solid, good ideas. Running out of energy, the silver people being copied, and the reality of deciding whether you want to be copied or not, and the Demon Planet. Because this one is called Demon, I feel like the one that they should have went with was the Demon Planet, and they should have upped the stakes to a really high level. I even like this is dying on the Demon Planet is better than Tasha Yar getting killed by the Skin of Evil monster, right? Like, it's okay, and that's about it. I'm gonna give it 2 out of 5 pools of silver blood.
I mean, I thought it was like decent. Like you said, I mean, there were a couple of cool concepts that they put in here, and I don't think they really hit home runs with those concepts. I really like the Paris and Kim scenes in this episode, and as unnecessary as the like whole sickbay thing was, I thought it was kind of funny. The one really major criticism I would sort of have for this episode is that they built it up so much in the beginning, just how dangerous and awful and brutal this planet was, but you never really got that sense through the course of the episode that the ship was like as imperiled as it was, and no one really seemed genuinely concerned about, oh, we're almost out of energy, or, oh, we've landed on this, you know, incredibly dangerous planet. Like, everyone just sort of seemed like, oh, this is just like a regular day on Voyager, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd say that would be my major criticism of it. I mean, I think it's an okay episode, and I'll give it 3 pools of silver blood out of 5. I think they could have executed it a little bit better.
And you did remember most of it, right? So that means something.
All right, we're almost to the end here. We're at the Andrew's favorite part of the show, where we will pull a new episode out of our painter's cap of episodes, and then Andrew will have 1 minute to tell me what he can about the episode. How do you feel? How are you feeling right now?
I am feeling like we have not had an Enterprise episode, a Discovery episode, or a animated series episode. So you know what? Even though I don't really know those episodes that great, I feel like we are due.
All right, well, I'm going to reach in. I'm going to dig out an episode here. I've got one for Andrew here, and your wish will not be granted.
Not this week.
Not this week. This is a good one, and I think you will probably do very well with this. We're back to Next Generation.
Next Generation.
It is from Season 7, Episode Number 19, and the title is Genesis.
Genesis. I really hope that I get the right episode with the right situation.
Well, we'll see how you do. Now, if you're playing along at home, I'd suggest that you hit the pause button for a moment, grab a piece of paper and a writing utensil, or maybe the notes app on your phone, and let's see if you can write down what you can remember from Genesis. Whether it's the plot, whether it's some characters, some trivia, some of the good lines, whatever you can think of that you might be able to write down and see how you do. Andrew's gathering his thoughts. All right, I have 1 minute on the clock. Andrew, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, 1 minute starting now.
So this is an episode that we have talked about in the past as being one of the great horror episodes of The Next Generation. I don't remember what the setup is, and that's the biggest part that I'm going to run into. I believe it's the Doctor and Picard. They go away on an away mission or something. When they get back to the ship has had some sort of anomaly hit them, and it has caused the crew to devolve back to their original kind of... wherever they were from. So like Troy is kind of like a water-based like creature lizard kind of thing. Barclay is like a giant spider for some reason. Riker, I think, is either like a werewolf or like a, he's kind of like a crazed maniac person. And same thing with Worf, is they've all kind of devolved, and they're like, the ship has kind of like run into chaos, and basically the episode is them trying to figure it all out and get everybody back to normal, and it's very spooky and scary, and it's lots of great jump scares and stuff like that.
And that is 1 minute. Yeah, that's pretty much spot on. This is this is one of my favorite like horror episodes of Star Trek. You read my Halloween edition of the
that is very true. That gave me a little bit of a helper, didn't it? I forgot about that because I did read that, and that's probably the one that tipped me off. So excellent. Yeah, you know what, it's I forgot it was Season 7 though.
Yeah, it
doesn't seem like it was Season 7, but yeah, I guess it was.
It was pretty later on. Yeah, it was towards the end of even towards the end of that season, episode 19. So
yeah, it's getting near the end of the line. So it was a good one. We better go off and watch that right now.
I was actually thinking of just throwing it on the other day because I was, sitting at home and had a little bit of spare time on my hands. But now I have an excuse to watch it.
Indeed.
All right. Well, that's it. That is the end of this week's podcast. Thanks so much for joining us on Random Trek Review. And we hope you will join us next time on RTR as we take a look at some de-evolved life forms in Genesis.
Bye, everybody.